This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild. Welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me Ian Murphy of the Buffalo Beast. You may remember him as the guy who punked Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin as he was impersonating one of the Koch brothers. Ian Murphy, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm truly honored to be here.
Well, the honor's mine. I only met you once before, and that's when you came on stage at a little event we were doing in Madison where Dennis Kucinich and Jim Hightower were speaking, and Hightower brought you up. And, you know, I heard a lot about you because of the Koch brothers thing, but, you know, I don't know that much about you, so why don't you tell me and tell the listener what your background is, how you got interested in journalism?
Well, I was, I'm just a blue-collar dude. I was living out in Seattle. I was a building manager at this place called the Heroin Hotel.
Truly,
it's
that's the name
of it? That's exactly what it's called, and it's exactly what it sounds like. That was 2003. Moved back to Buffalo, my hometown, in 2004, and I found The Beast. And this was a print newspaper at the time. It was founded by Matt Taibbi.
Was he working there then?
No, he'd split long ago. I didn't know that, but...
And it was a free weekly like the Village Voice or something?
It was a free bi-weekly at the time. And I just found it at a Chinese restaurant. And the first article I read by Matt, I just thought, oh, I have to get involved with this thing. It was amazing to me. And so I went down there, and at first I was the delivery boy. And then I became the art director while it was still in print. And now I'm the editor. You know.
And what was it about The Beast that you saw as amazing?
Well, it was just funny. I mean, and besides Taibbi's work, the editor at the time, Al Uthman, he's still involved somewhat with The Beast. It just blew my mind. You know, it was classic satire, kind of National Lampoon type stuff, where it makes you laugh and you learn something.
And it's real freewheeling. I was just at the website, buffalobeast.com, and you still have that freewheeling kind of Hunter Thompson approach to some extent, but also just really pointed satire. And tell me a little bit about Taibbi. I've never met him. What's he like?
I've never met him.
No, he hasn't come by the office?
No, no. He hasn't been around in quite some time. I was covering the New Hampshire primaries in 2008. And I had plans to meet up with him then, but it turned out I was deathly ill.
So you say you're no longer printing, you're on the web right now. Was that a difficult transition, and how's that working?
It was not difficult. I mean, we were a terrible print publication. We were brutal towards potential advertisers. We had this whole Beast Eats section where we'd review restaurants and just completely ruin our chances of ever sustaining ad revenue. So it's basically was a cost-cutting measure, and it's working well.
And how do you survive on the web, though? That's a big question for a lot of publications.
Very carefully. I mean, we don't. I mean, we're barely scraping by, but that's a tough question. I mean, it's really, you know, there's the demise of this print media, but at the same time, the advertising online isn't becoming, you know, something people can survive off of. So it's kind of a paradox.
I remember reading Taibbi's quote as to why he left the Buffalo Beast, and he said he didn't want to run a business at the same time he was writing. How do you deal with that dilemma?
I don't. I just throw up like Google ads and hope we get enough hits so I can eat a sandwich every once in a while.
So let's get to this Scott Walker prank of yours, which, coming from Wisconsin here, where we were at these protests every day down at the Capitol at noontime, and then these huge rallies on the Saturdays. It was so much of a shot in the arm to hear you make such a fool out of Governor Scott Walker. How'd you come up with that idea?
Oh, I don't know. This is a question I've been asked a lot of times, and I don't know. Hume said that ideas are combinations of other people's ideas, so I really don't know, man. It's a very abstract, hard question to answer.
But you're—I read you're a prank. You've done pranks before, all
sure,
kinds of pranks.
Sure.
What were some of those pranks?
Well, I don't know if they all qualify as pranks, but I get into mischief quite a bit. One of my favorites is I attended Easter Mass dressed as a clown a few years back. That was really fun and
just at a local church.
Yeah.
How were you received?
Not so well.
Did they kick you out?
They did. They did. Not surprising. Yeah, and probably my most successful prank before the Walker thing was we did pull this little jape on the Ken Ham's Creation Museum. You know, it was a $27 million project that, if you don't know, depicts young Earth creationism as this scientific, this museum, quote unquote, right? Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden riding dinosaurs and all that nonsense. So myself and an associate of mine, Josh Bunting, thought it would be fun to kind of mess with them. So we set up this fake website called The Special Times. It was purportedly for, you know, special needs Christians, and I had this my pseudonym for it was Dougie Johnston, and I supposedly had Asperger's syndrome by proxy, which just completely doesn't exist. It doesn't mean anything, and it was really ridiculous. And they let us in for free. You know, they gave us the whirlwind tour.
What's it like, that creation museum?
Like a lobotomy, I guess. If a building could feel like a lobotomy, that's kind of what it's like. You know, it's just...
I mean, do they have displays of humans and dinosaurs playing
yeah.
together? Or just
yeah,
weird
that's,
stuff like that?
That's the whole thing. I don't understand how that happens.
We meant always to do a story in the Progressive about it. I think the most we had was a no comment, but we should have signed you up to go there.
Well, they
how were you treated when you were there? They let you in, and then what happened?
Oh, they did, and you know, I interviewed the founder, Ken Ham, and it was quite lovely. Everyone was very nice to me. You know, it was just a fun thing to do.
And they didn't know they were being
They claimed pimped. After the fact that they did, but I'd really doubt that they'd have their CEO being forced hugged by some crazy guy in sweatpants up to his nipples if they knew he was not who he said he was. Mm-hmm. But Matt. They are opening a Noah's Ark rather soon. So
in Kentucky, where are
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
Well, I'm speaking with Ian Murphy of the Buffalo Beast or BuffaloBeast.com or just the Beast. He's the guy who pretended to be David Koch when he was calling up Scott Walker, and he actually was Ian Murphy. But what was it about that phone conversation that surprised you the most?
Well, it's what I led with was the idea that they'd thought about inserting agents provocateur into the crowd. I mean, this is kind of an age-old technique to crush progressive people's movements. I mean, it's been done over and over. But the fact that he was talking about it just really blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real telling thing. Also, there was something in there about, yeah, I have a baseball bat here. So Scott Walker was going to go into the crowd with his
right.
Louisville
well,
slugger.
I mean, I just took that as, you know, kind of rhetoric.
Just
you
macho
know, he's
posture.
Just, yeah, he's just BSing.
To me, that whole radio taped conversation that you put up on the web at BuffaloBeast.com not only showed what was happening in Wisconsin, but it was like a snapshot of how the ruling class rules in America. I mean, the politicians, elected officials, are just stooges of the people with the money, stooges of errand boys, water boys, for their you know corporate paymasters. And it was just right there. I mean, that should be civics class 101 in eighth grade in high school and college.
Well, absolutely. I mean, since 1886, we've had a series of Supreme Court cases till the you know, very recently with Citizens United, where we have a system that money equals speech. So, you know, it's almost impossible to counteract something like that.
But weren't you surprised that the tape didn't have more impact? I mean, I kind of was. This was really embarrassing. If any other elected official had been, you know, kissing the rear end of some billionaire, I would have thought it would have discredited him. But maybe that's, you know, Walker says his whole slogan is open for business, and this maybe illustrated it better than anything. So maybe he thought it was not so bad.
Maybe. I don't know. It's like politically in the media, we're just living in this bizarre wilderness of bias confirmation. So once you get on, if you're so far gone that you're on Scott Walker's side, I don't know what he'd have to do for you not to just be, you know, not to root for what he's doing.
What do you mean by bias confirmation?
Well, you know, it's a very common logical fallacy. It's, you know, you can see it everywhere. You know, go to your Facebook page, your Twitter feed, and it's, unless you're very, you know, conscious about it, people are basically getting their news from people they tend to agree with. So it just reinforces your bias constantly.
And how do you get around that? I mean, it's more and more so in this day and age of cable TV and of, you know, the websites. I mean, you could read the Progressive in the morning, go to the Nation website during the day and watch MSNBC at night.
Right.
And, you know, if you live in a place like Madison, Wisconsin, or Cambridge, or maybe Seattle, probably not Buffalo, but you wouldn't need to encounter someone who had a different idea. And on the right, they can do the same thing. If you're living in anywhere other than those places, you could, you know, listen to Limbaugh and Hannity and watch Fox News like a IV drip, and you wouldn't know that there's another world out there.
Yeah, I don't know how to avoid that. I mean, on a really fundamental level, I would think a decent, you know, grade school education, teaching people how to critically think, is very, very important. But as far as how people receive their news these days, I don't know, you know, how you should mandate that they check out the other side. But I also just want to add, you know, and I'm sure you're well aware of this idea of, you know, these things are not equal. I understand there's bias on the left and bias on the right, but the right has it far more wrong. I just want to say that.
So Rachel Maddow is not equal to Sean Hannity.
Oh, of course not.
And how do they differ?
Well, I think she's more based in facts. I mean, I believe she's pushed some memes that weren't entirely correct, but that's rare.
I mean, I like Rachel Maddow.
Everyone makes mistakes.
She's
but
really intelligent, and I think she tries to let other people get their say in. And Hannity is a bully and ignoramus, it seems to me. But they are, you know, they're both representing different sides of an issue. Fox News, however, is, as John Stewart has pointed out, a lot of other people have pointed out, including the senator from Minnesota, you know, they lie and they lie and they lie, and they distort and they distort and they distort. So it's one thing to articulate your views, another thing to say 2 + 2 = 5 or 6.5.
Right, right. And this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately is, you know, I did this prank phone call, and I was even denounced by the Society of Professional Journalists, which, you know, really funny because they've not said peep about Breitbart or O'Keefe or anything like that. But along the lines of just pranking someone, we're all being pranked by these people like the Kochs just constantly. I mean, they pour millions and millions into disinforming the public. And, of course, Fox is a part of that. But, you know, it's not a fun little joke at the end. The punchline is, you know, catastrophic climate change.
Right, and they've got tremendous resources to do it, as you're suggesting,
and
we're all getting screwed at the end. You're doing work like the Yes Men. Have you encountered them? Do you know those guys and the work that they do?
I definitely know of them. I'm a huge fan. I have been for a while, and I've contacted them through email a few times, and they've been gracious enough to write back. But, yeah.
Do you have people you'd like to play pranks on still? Do you have a little list of people you want to prank, or it just comes up and you go with it?
I have a list.
Do you really?
It's a very secret list, yes.
I'm speaking with Ian Murphy of the Buffalo Beast. He's the guy who did the phony phone calls, we used to call it, with Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine, and this is Progressive Radio, creatively called. You got into trouble with the right wing anyway when you posted something a few years back about supporting the troops.
Yes.
It was the opposite of supporting the troops. F the troops, as I imagine, I recall the headline. Why'd you go way out there?
I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where I'm not an appropriate person a lot of times, so I don't know how very wrong something I'm saying may be to other people. So I don't fully grasp that. But it's also, you know, you don't know how far to go until you cross a line. And I don't know if I necessarily did, but, you know, it was, I think it was 2007 or 2006 when I actually wrote that. I think. But, you know, it was very much this environment of Bush propaganda, support the troops, support the troops, support the troops. And it kind of just pushed me to the breaking point where I just wanted to say I did not support the troops.
And you said it as emphatically as possible.
Yeah, well, you know, it was very provocative. The title was purposely provocative. The first paragraph is what invariably gets quoted. And all that is, you know, this inflammatory rhetoric, which is to say, we can't talk like this, but why? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just interesting, this idea of support the troops. It's like this perfect slogan, because it really means support the war.
Right.
I mean,
what was the feedback, blowback you got on that? Did you get any death threats?
Oh, tons of death threats.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did they come?
Oh, these were all online death threats, so I didn't take them very seriously. But, you know, there's people at Free Republic posting, you know, Google map images of here's their office from an aerial view as if someone's going to, you know, fly down with a stealth bomber and take us out.
That's a little close, though. You didn't call the police or anything?
No. No.
I mean, there is something about puncturing the prevailing demand, requirement, that you not say anything bad about the troops, that everyone, it's compulsory obedience. It's, you know, roll over, obey, you know, follow the orders.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, it kind of reminded me of a George Carlin skit in a way. I mean, because that's what Carlin would do.
Sure.
You know, he would just say, you know, this is all BS, and he would just run it down one thing after another. He didn't care who he was making fun of.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the troops and this idea of supporting the troops, which came around among some progressives as a reaction to the almost parody of what happened during the Vietnam War. The people accepted the idea that isn't that based in fact. I don't think, though, I've heard from some soldiers that it happened to them that, you know, they were so mistreated when they came back from Vietnam. And so
right.
People in the progressive movement say, well, we're not going to do that again, and we're going to always support the troops. We're going to fly our yellow flags as they did during the first Gulf War and do all the support the troops rhetoric in the second Gulf War. But, you know, it gets hard sometimes when you see Abu Ghraib, for instance.
Yeah, exactly.
And then so what does that say? So, I, you know, I appreciate the fact that you laid it all out there, and I always appreciate it when people, you know, take chances, take risks. There's so little risk-taking in journalism these days that you can find it still at the Buffalo Beast with Ian Murphy at buffalobeast.com. You ran as a Green. You decided to run for office this year in a very prominent district, it turned out, New York's 26th Congressional. Tell me about that.
Well, I blame Ben Mansky, local Madison, prominent Green. No, I don't. I do. I don't. A little bit.
Ben has also been involved in the National Green Party.
So oh, sure.
I don't want him to take offense at that.
No.
But yeah, Ben's ran as a Green also in Wisconsin and got something like 30% of the vote in a state assembly race. But, you know, the system's rigged against third parties. So mostly what you can do in third parties is, or independent runs like Ralph Nader did, is just, you know, say things that other people aren't saying and use it as education. Is that what you did?
Well, that's what I tried to do, but ultimately, getting back to this idea of speech equals money, that's kind of the wall I ran into. I you know, I wasn't completely delusional. I didn't think I had a chance of winning, but I thought it would be a smoother process.
Well, what were the bumps?
Basically, what was tantamount to a local media blackout. I got great press. You know, I think I was on the Progressive website. I was on HuffPo, Salon, you know, stuff like that. There was a lot of national talk about it, but, you know, the local paper, Buffalo News, you know, they just...
And did you do the typical door-to-door stuff, and what was that like?
No, I didn't. Like, you know, I'm fond of saying I jogged for Congress. Because, you know, honestly... there was basically, I break it down into two separate elections almost. There was the pre-April 15th segment of the election where Jane Corwin, the Republican, was the shoo-in. She was going to win. Everyone knew it. And then April 15th, you got your guy over here, Paul Ryan. April 16th, she said she'd vote for this, you know, draconian budget, which, you know, of course, as you know, more tax cuts for billionaires and
trash Medicare.
Yeah, exactly. And old people vote. So I think that's the lesson. Hopefully, I mean, that was the narrative, national narrative, for a good 4 or 5 days until, you know, Anthony Weiner's penis became just the object of national obsession. But yeah,
we didn't say a word one about that at the Progressive, I'm pleased to say.
Oh, I'm sorry to have.
What a ridiculous story. And, you know, from day one, you knew how it was going to end anyway. And it was just so, for three weeks, people just, in the mainstream corporate media, were just with the most titillating, ridiculous reporting and questioning and writing. And it was just, it was a total non-story about a not a very important political figure who was going to disappear.
Right.
And so, you know, a month later, 2 months later, it's really meaningless, and there's other stuff going on. You know, Obama was bombing a country illegally in Libya, and the other wars he's fighting. It was astonishing to me. You mentioned Paul Ryan, and then I went to your website recently and saw a really interesting thing on the website of the BuffaloBeast.com, and that was you took to task some progressive religious people for criticizing Ryan for liking Ayn Rand. And the reason they were criticizing him was because they were saying, look, Ayn Rand's an atheist. Paul Ryan likes atheists.
Yeah.
So tell me about that response that you wrote.
Well, yeah, I thought, strategically, it may even be smart because we're so religious in this country. But in the long term, it seems very counterproductive to kind of pin this immoral economic philosophy of Rand's to her atheism. I mean, it has one thing has nothing to do with the other, in my opinion, and morality has nothing to do with religion, in my opinion. That's something we need to outgrow as a species, as a country, and that's real progress to me. And I'm a pretty staunch atheist, and it really pissed me off. What's funny about that piece was, you know, the people who put together this video, American Values Network. The head of it is Bernd Strider. And, you know, he consults people like Clinton and Pelosi when they need to connect with religious people, middle American types. And I went up to Netroots last weekend in Minneapolis, and they were doing a panel there. And what's I just blew my mind was he walked up to me, and he knew who I was.
Because of the column you'd written?
Yeah.
I guess what did he say to you?
He just said he'd gotten a lot of emails about it. And then, you know, they went into their whole shtick about how it's smart to kind of equate this silly objectivist libertarian worldview with atheism.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of people who have that worldview who aren't atheists. So really, atheism is separate from the whole.
Yeah, and really, if you look at the studies, I mean, I can't recall when this came out, but there was a Pew study on the Tea Partiers, and they're hyper-religious people. I mean, like something like 85% of them are devout Christians. So the way I see it is, you know, it's just more delusional you get, the more delusional you get.
Speaking with Ian Murphy, I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. This is Progressive Radio. Ian Murphy is a journalist at the Buffalo Beast, buffalobeast.com, or just the Beast. He's most famous for playing that phony phone call against Governor Scott Walker, which you talked about a little bit before. Let's talk about the Tea Partiers a little more.
Sure.
When they've come to Madison, I'd go out with my little reporter's pad and go interview them. And the astonishing thing about me was, about talking to them to me, was that they don't really represent a new phenomenon, though they're painted in the media as a new phenomenon. Every one of them was a Republican. Everyone had voted for McCain. Everyone said that McCain wasn't conservative enough for them. They're the right wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And so it's not new. They aren't, according to the polls, you were studying polls, they aren't ignoramuses. I mean, they have a education level, any more so than the big chunk of the public is. I mean, they have the same education level or more than a lot of other people. But the thing is about the corporate media just love the Tea Party. They love the Tea Party phenomenon.
Yeah.
We had protests here in Wisconsin that were historic over a period of months, the biggest pro-labor marches since the 1930s, the biggest pro-labor public sector worker marches ever in the history of the United States. And, you know, they covered them for a week. you know, and yeah. But you get, and this is with 100,000 people out there, and even in its waning days, we had 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, and you get a, you know, 700 tea party or somewhere, and oh my God, there's this great thing happening.
Yeah, that's big news.
It's just, it's amazing to me the lens that they're using. We just have a few minutes left. I wanted your take on Obama.
It's becoming a cliche now amongst progressives, but he's just a Republican to me. I mean, he's obviously a centrist Democrat, and it's good to see people like Ezra Klein from Washington Post catching up on this idea that politically, policy-wise, he's a Republican from the early 90s. If you look at anything he's done.
I mean, I get from people. Look, you didn't have a choice. Once you become president, actually, you don't have that much power, people will say to me. You know, the CIA talks to you, or the Pentagon talks to you, or Wall Street talks to you, and you really can't do much. I don't buy that. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't really buy it either. I mean, I think it takes a certain amount of political will to get anything done, regardless. But... You got to stay in power, right? You can't rock the boat too much.
Well, they're staying in power, and they're staying in power. I mean,
yeah.
You know, people say, "Well, you would have gotten assassinated if he bucked the power elite."
Sure. Well, I think people, the whole hopey changey thing. I think people just put so much on this guy that wasn't really there. I mean, great orator and all that. That doesn't mean he's, you know, truly a progressive guy, but people just wanted something so badly after Bush Cheney. It was just, you know, it's kind of like Nike. He's like a super brand, you know. People just saw themselves in him. They projected all their hopes and wishes of Candyland America, which, you know, it's being crushed underfoot.
And he was a good marketer too. I mean,
he
could speak progressive to progressive crowds. He could talk about, you know, you're the change, you're the people we've been waiting for,
right.
All that stuff, which is straight out of June Jordan poem. And, and he would talk about restoring civil liberties. He wouldn't take us to war without approval of Congress and all this stuff. And then, wow, civil liberties he was going to protect. He's a constitutional lawyer and just been rolling back one after another. What about, is there any hope for third-party challenges to the presidential level?
I don't know. The way the system's set up now, I keep going back to this, but speech equals money. And to really get inside of people's heads and win the hearts and minds, so to speak, you really have to have a big mouth. Mm-hmm. Which is to say, you need a lot of cash.
And how do we get around that one?
Well, you know, publicly financed elections is the silver bullet.
But the way the court is, we're almost going to have a constitutional amendment, seems to me, to overturn that Citizens United decision, because on one court decision after another, they're just coming down against the ability to regulate money.
Yeah. Well, and the weirdest thing about that case is they basically begged for the case. I mean, they were supposed to rule on a really narrow portion of that, and they ruled on this broad scope, which is, you know, unprecedented.
Well, that's a current Supreme Court for you. So, Ian Murphy, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
You can check out Ian Murphy's work at buffalobeast.com. And I'll be back next week. Thanks so much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.